Well, good morning. My name is Max Holt from Clarksville, Tennessee, Hilldale Baptist Church. I am the singles minister there. And you are in this session called Danger Zones in Single Relationships. I've been in my church for 13 and a half years. I started the singles ministry there. And I'll give you some statistics later about all the marriages and relationships and so on. But all of those drove me to do a lot of research on single relationships. I myself am not qualified to talk about single relationships. I have been married for 41 and a half years to the greatest woman in the world named Sandy Holt. And we were childhood sweethearts. She did my sweet 16 birthday party. And we were in a relationship for 5 years before we got married. And we've been married over 41 years. We've decided to go another 41 and then reevaluate this marriage thing and see how it's going. So the only way I'm qualified at all to talk about single relationships is through the single adults in my group over the years who have taught me about single relationships. I do a lot of research and a lot of reading. And there's a chair up here.
Right up front.
Up front. Right in front of the teacher. Right in front of the teacher. And so I find a lot of stuff. I read and learn a lot of stuff about relationships. And, of course, my singles are teaching me all the time about single relationships. So through that whole process, since there are so many challenges in single relationships and so many challenges in married relationships, I'm actually writing a book at this point. I'm going to be retiring from my church June the 3rd, 2007. And I'll be going into full-time writing and speaking and be working for Lifeway Christian Resources. And also with the Tennessee Baptist Convention in the area of singles leadership and training and so on. And so the book that I'm writing is a two-sided book. When you look at the book this way, it'll say Danger Zones in Single Relationships. And then when you flip it over this way, it'll say Danger Zones in Marriage. So the singles can buy it, and when they get married, keep it. And it will work. I brought some resources with me here, just a few things that that have inspired me in the area of single adult ministry. I found out early on in my ministry that I was totally clueless about singles. I got married very young, after a five-year relationship with my wife. And so, according to a lot of singles in my group, I've never really been single, which is true. I've never really been single. So the first thing I did, understanding that I was clueless about singles and clueless about single ministry, is I formed, like the first week I was on the job, I formed a single ministry team of all categories of singles I could find. Singles who were in their 40s and never been married, and singles who were in their 20s and been divorced, and those without kids and those with kids. And just every category I could find, I formed a leadership team within my church. And met with these singles weekly for a while, and then every week, and then now we meet monthly. And these singles have been teaching me all these things all these years. And so that's why, if I speak with any authority at all, it's because of the single adults in my life who have taught me. So there's some things that I thought were interesting that I might start us off with today. For instance, you might be a single adult if... By the way, how many of you in here are single? Wow, almost all of you. How many of you are like me, a VMP, a very married person? We have three VMPs in here, and the rest are single. Okay, you might be a single adult if a relative has ever asked, "Aren't you married yet?" If your answering machine tape actually wears out. If you've had so many blind dates, you qualify for a white cane. You might be a single man if the two most important women in your life, Betty Crocker and Little Debbie. You might be a single man if your definition of dust, a protective coating for furniture. You might be a single man if you ask for a doggy bag at wedding receptions. You might be a single man if everything you understand about women can be written on one of those little tiny post-it notes. You might be a single woman if the only thing in your apartment that runs is your pantyhose. You might be a single woman if you've ever heard a friend say, "I know this great guy with a great personality." You might be a single woman if everything you understand about men can be written on one half of one of those little tiny post-it notes. By the way, I got an email not long ago of the 20 thinnest books in the world. The 20 smallest books in the world. For instance, one of them was Beauty Secrets by Janet Reno. Another one was Dating Etiquette by Mike Tyson. That was one of the 20 thinnest books in the world. Motivational Speeches by Dr. Jack Kevorkian. The Wild Years by Al Gore. My Book of Morals by Bill Clinton. That was a real thin book. My Plan to Catch the Real Killers by O.J. Simpson. But numbers 7 and 8 on this list of the 20 thinnest books in the world was Everything Men Know About Women and Everything Women Know About Men. Okay. So, you might be a single parent if... You got any single parents in here? You might be a single parent if your calendar only has every other weekend on it. You might be a single parent if all of your dates have to go through a kid approval dinner. You might be a single parent if your child has ever gotten sick 30 minutes before a date. You might be a single parent if juggling spaghetti is easier than getting your kids out the door for church. So that's just a little deal. Several years ago, I was at a conference in Phoenix, Arizona, and the speaker shared with us a website that he had discovered about relationships. And actually, this website was designed, you know, these electronic greeting cards that you can get? This one had electronic relationship termination cards. Electronic cards to terminate your relationship. And this website, the URL for this website, and it's out of business now. I can understand why, but last time I checked, it was out of business. But the website was www.cya.com, C-Y-A.com, C-Y-A.com. And so I printed off one of their demonstration cards before they went out of business, and this shows two birds sitting on a wire. You know, typical birds sitting on a wire, sitting close together. These two birds are sitting on the wire, but opposite of each other. And the card says, compatibility. Two people who communicate, share major likes and dislikes, are motivated by similar goals and philosophies, stimulated by the same wants and desires, and above all, can coexist in harmony. Doesn't sound like us, does it? See ya. Now that is on the far end of rudeness in relationships, see? So this gave me a clue that single relationships can be challenging, right? Now to demonstrate a little bit of the difference between men and women, and other than anatomically, men and women are quite different, as you would well imagine. Now this is oil change instructions, okay? Your car needs an oil change, right? Oil change instructions. Okay, here are the instructions for women. Go to Jiffy Lube after 3,000 miles on the odometer. Drink a cup of coffee, wait 15 minutes, write a check, and take your vehicle home. Oil change, $20. Coffee, $1. Total, $21. Oil change instructions for men. Wait till Saturday, drive to the auto parts store, buy a case of oil, a filter, some kitty litter, hand cleaner, and a scented tree to hang in the mirror. Write a check for $50. Go to the 7-Eleven, buy a case of beer, write a check for $20, drive home, open a beer, drink it, jack up the car, spend 30 minutes looking for the jack stands. The jack stands are under the kid's pedal car. In frustration, open another can of beer and drink it, place the drain pan under the engine, look for a 9/16 box end wrench. This is a three-page deal here. Give up and use a crescent wrench, unscrew the drain plug, drop the drain plug in the oil pan, splash hot oil all over you in the process, do some cussing. Crawl out from under the car, wipe off the oil, throw some kitty litter on the spilled oil. Have another beer and watch the oil drain. Spend 30 minutes looking for the oil filter wrench, give up, crawl out of the car, drive a screwdriver through the oil filter, twist it off, crawl out from under the car, dripping oil all over you, splashing oil everywhere from every hole, cleverly hide the oil filter among the trash in the can, avoiding the environmental penalties. Drink another beer. Your buddy shows up, finish the case of beer with him, decide to finish the oil change tomorrow so you can go over and see his new garage door opener. On Sunday, skip church because I got to change the oil. Drag the pan full of oil out back from underneath the car, cleverly dump the oil in a hole in the backyard and cover it up so you don't have to take it to recycle. Throw kitty litter on the oil you spilled in step 18. Drink beer. No, you all ran out of beer, so... that you used yesterday, go walk to the 7-Eleven, buy more beer, install the new oil filter, dump the first quart of fresh oil in the engine, then remember that you forgot to put the drain plug in, hurry to find the drain plug, it's buried in the backyard with the old oil. in the hole. So you drink some beer in frustration, you get a shovel out, you dig up the old oil, you sift through the oily dirt, find the drain plug, you wash the drain plug with lawnmower gas, the first quart of oil is now on the ground underneath the car, you throw more kitty litter on that, you drink more beer, you crawl into the car, you bang your head on the floorboard of the car in reaction to step 31 of spilling oil on yourself. Do another cussing fit. Throw the crescent wrench away, cuss for 10 minutes, drink beer, clean your hands and forehead and bandage to stop the blood flow. Dump in 5 fresh quarts of oil, lower the car from the jack stands, accidentally crushing the remainder of the case of new oil that you left under the car. Move the car back, apply more kitty litter, drink beer, test drive the car, get pulled over for driving under the influence, car gets impounded, call your wife, make bail, 12 hours later get the car out of impound, money spent, parts, $50 for oil, the DUI, $2,500, impound fee, $75, bail, $1,500, beer, $40, total cost of oil change, $4,165. That is a demonstration of the difference in philosophy between men and women. Here's something interesting about marriage that was forwarded to me from statistics taken out of USA Today. And people questioned in their first year of marriage whether or not they believed they had chose the right mate. 75% said yes. At 5 years, 50% said yes. 10 years, 40% said yes. 15 years, 25% said yes. However, following the 20th year, it's back up to 75% said yes. Looking at what happens in relationships from the beginning through a process of maturing. And that is one of the challenges in relationships, is the maturing process. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we go along. I recommend that you read publications like USA Today. I recommend that you read Christianity Today. If you go online, they have a singles page on Christianity Today. And I get a lot of good information off that singles page on the Christianity Today website. It's really excellent. They have some great articles on there. They do surveys all the time among singles. And by the way, not too long ago, they did a survey for singles. When you go to a church, what is it about that church that would make you stay at that church, that would make you join that church? And they had choices like, a children's ministry, missions ministry, mission trips, presence of other singles, singles ministry in the church, style of worship, different styles of worship in the church, relevant Bible study, and a few others. And what astounded me is that style of worship only got like 2%. Singles ministry, established singles ministry only got like 5%. But the number one got 62% relevant Bible study. Bible study that mattered to your life. So for those of you who are involved in Bible study in some way, take that to heart. If you want to do excellence, spend it on your Bible study. Spend your budget on your Bible study and do that with excellence. So anyway, this just a few little things kind of to get you started on why I felt this was necessary to do danger zones in single relationships. Now, I've been technology challenged. I did start it. Yes. Come on in. I think there's a... We've got another chair somewhere?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, right here.
Yes.
Thank you.
Right down there. So, because of the challenges that I have seen single adults go through, I have identified, by working with singles, some of the danger zones, and there are more danger zones than what I'm going to show you, but I've only got an hour and 15 minutes. So I'll show you what I think are some of the primary danger zones that you as leaders or you as singles need to watch out for. If you're a leader, you need to be doing relationship training for singles, by the way. Nationally, in national surveys, about every 10 years, Lifeway does this. But in national surveys, singles consistently, about 95% of singles consistently say that a major goal in their life is to be happily married. That being the case, it would be dumb for single adult ministries not to do relationship training to help singles move toward that goal in a quality way in their life. So I wanted to share with you a few of what I think are the danger zones that singles have to to watch out for, that leaders have to watch out for in the lives of singles. Now, one of the first questions I get is like this surprise look here. Danger? What danger? I mean, your relationships are fun. What danger could there be in relationships? Well, let me ask you, how many of you in this room have ever had a relationship loss? How many of you have had a lost boyfriend, girlfriend, or wife, or husband, or whatever? I mean, almost all of you could raise your hand because you've gone through that particular danger zone in relationships. So yeah, 90%, more than 90% say that a major goal in their life is to be happily married. There are categories of singles that churches deal with. And what I've discovered as I teach around conventions and churches and different denominations that I go to and teach is that most of us who are leaders are clueless about singles. Do I hear an amen? Most leaders are clueless about singles. In my own denomination, Southern Baptist, it's a struggle as I work with pastors and leaders and states and conventions and so on to raise their awareness and understanding of the need for single adult ministry in some way in their convention or church. It is just a challenge because pastors fail to realize that about 50% of the adult population is single. And when they specifically decide not to minister to singles, they exclude 50% of adults from church growth. And pastors want to grow their church, don't they? But they're just not seeing, they're not connecting the dots. And I want to try to help them connect the dots. So here are some of what I have heard people say, and some have been made up about these stereotypes of singles, putting singles in categories. And nobody likes to be pigeonholed, but pastors do it anyway, and churches do it anyway. So I thought we'd share some funny stereotypes of categories of singles. The first category is Pringles, which are professional singles. Tingles, touchy singles. Shingles, unmarried roofers. Actually, I have two of those in my group at Hilldale Baptist Church in Clarksville, Tennessee. Quadringles, four singles living in one apartment. Got a few of those too. Flingles, singles capable of only short romantic relationships. I got more than I need of those in my group, particularly in my young singles area. Got quite a few flingles in my group. Kingles, singles who are devoted to Elvis. Well, I had to throw that in because I'm from Tennessee, you know, and I live about 4 hours from Memphis, Tennessee, and of course, Memphis is Elvis country. You got Graceland there, and actually, Freddie Johnson, the leader of our group here, is from not too far from Memphis, just right on the edge of Memphis, and he's now moving to a new church in Tupelo, Mississippi, which was the birthplace of Elvis. And so I've been in Tennessee now. I was there 6 years when I was in the Army. I'm retired Army, 22 years in the Army, and I was in Tennessee for 6 years then, and I've been back in Tennessee for 13 and a half, so 19 and a half years experience in Tennessee. And during that time, I've seen some really, really awful Elvis impersonators. Haven't you seen some of those? And so I've been working on an accurate Elvis impersonation. So I want to share for you today, you're one of the first groups to see this now. I want to share with you today what some have told me is the most accurate, I need some room here, the most accurate impersonation of Elvis Presley. Are you ready for this? All right, here we go. He's dead. The reality is, Elvis. That's awful, isn't it? Yeah, Elvis is dead. He might have been the original redneck. I don't know, Tupelo, Mississippi, and you know Memphis, Tennessee. But he's not at Kroger, and nobody's seen him at Walmart. Elvis is actually dead. Actually, we had Elvis' stepbrother at our church several years ago, and he confirmed that he was at the funeral, and Elvis is dead. So there are. Kingles. Well, you know, if we're going to talk about relationships, I have to try to understand the heart of singles, the way singles think. And so who better to ask about how singles think than children? Okay? Because children observe their moms and dads, you know, they're single. And so children have an opinion about relationships and what relationships are all about. And so I thought I'd share with you some opinion of children. When young children were asked, what do most people do on a date? some said on the first date they just tell each other lies and that gets them all interested for another date. Another, when is it okay to kiss someone? And on a date, that's an important question, you know, because you're starting this dating relationship and you kind of wonder, you know, when is it appropriate to kiss someone? So ask the kids, when is it okay to kiss someone? And Jim says you should never kiss a girl unless you have enough bucks to buy her a ring and her own VCR because she'll want videos of the wedding. So from Jim's perspective, it's just a money thing, you know, it's a thing. Now, Gene says it's never okay to kiss a boy. They just slobber all over you. That's why I stopped doing it. See, Gene is more in tune with the real relationship issues associated with kissing. What is it like to fall in love? And you know, if you ask people what's it like to fall in love, they'll describe the symptoms of a cold or the flu. You know, you get all quivery all over, you know, you sweat and all this sort of stuff. And they try to give you the symptoms of the flu, what it's like to fall in love, because it's difficult to explain love, isn't it? And we're talking about relationships here. Love certainly comes into play. And so you have to figure out, what is this? What is love real? So you ask the kids, what is it like to fall in love? And Roger says, it's like an avalanche where you have to run for your life. And some guys and some girls maybe feel that way, that love is like an avalanche. Mike says, if falling in love is anything like learning how to spell, I don't want to do it. It takes too long. And, you know, for some people, it's a drudgery. Some people don't want to go through the process of relationships. They just want to have a relationship, you know, and not have to do all the stuff associated with relationships. You know what I'm talking about? People who don't want to be involved in your life, but they want to be in your life, see? And so this is one of the relationship challenges that people face here. Technology, you know, it's like the remote. It won't change, so you throw at it or something like that. So, but you know what? I've discovered that sometimes people just need a hug. A relationship is based on how you perceive it. You know, isn't it true that two people can be in some sort of a relationship and one person will perceive that it's more than it really is? Mm-hmm. Isn't that true?
Yes.
And how you perceive relationships is critical. And one of the danger zones in single relationships is perception. And so, and I'm going to try to, I'm sorry to stay out of your way here, I'm going to try to, since my mouse is not working anymore. One thing we want to deal with is reality. When we deal about single relationships, the danger zones, we want to stay with reality. Now, if you're in Tipton, Indiana, and you go to Cheryl's sign says here, it says, eat here and get gas. Now, she's telling you the truth up front. You know, she's giving you a warning up front. Now, it's actually a gas station and restaurant together. It's one of those older kind of greasy spoon places, you know. But we're going to talk reality when we talk about relationships and danger zones in relationships. Also, patience. Relationships require patience. Here's a sign that says emergency phone 174 kilometers ahead. I mean, I hope you don't have an emergency the next hour and a half or so, you know. You're going to be in deep trouble. There's also a lot of stress associated with relationships. As you can see with the fish in the blender, hoping somebody don't flip that button on. Sometimes you feel that way in relationships. You're on edge all the time. And that's one of the dangers, is that relationships can be very stressful for you emotionally and physically. Warning signs. There are warning signs everywhere in relationships. But people in relationships will often, what I call, put on blinders. They will refuse to see the warning signs associated with relationships. And the sign here says, pass with care and the car is upside down in the ditch. Because the driver obviously did not observe the warning sign. Now, there are some things that ought to be obvious in relationships. Now, here's a sign that says, caution, water on road during rain. Duh! I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. But you know what? There are things in relationships that we ought to know and we ought to figure out, but we just don't. It just makes no sense. I have been dealing with a relationship in my group that is extremely frustrating for me. Because this relationship formed out of a rescue attempt by the woman to rescue this young man who is 15 years younger than her and the same age as her oldest son, And within 2 weeks, they wanted to get married. Within 2 weeks after they met, they wanted to get married. And so, there are caution. I mean, there are some things that ought to be obvious to people that oftentimes are not obvious. He who doeth stupid things may well suffer the consequences. Now, I understand that some of you in the back may not see this, so let me explain this picture here. This is a guy with an electric drill drilling into the ceiling, standing on a metal ladder which is submerged in water. Now, this is stupid with a capital S. I mean, who would do this other than this guy? Who would do this? But don't we do stupid things? I mean, you know, when you get those stars in your eyes and you think you're in love, you can do some stupid things. So, danger zone number one. Danger zone number one. Your attitude. Chuck Swindoll says, as he talks about attitude, he says that he says a whole lot of stuff, but he bottom lines it like this. He says, I discovered that life is 10% what happens to me and 90% how I react to it. It's only 10% what happens to me, but 90% of everything is how I react to it. And the same is true in relationships. How you react is crucial. Your attitude about two different things, two different areas of life. First, your attitude about life itself. You know, some people believe, some singles believe that somehow life owes them something. Some singles believe that nothing is ever their fault, and some married people do too. But we're talking singles here. Anything that goes wrong, it's not their fault. It can't be their fault. You know, that's an old selfishness thing that we all have in our lives. And so, attitude about life, before you ever get into a relationship, is absolutely crucial. How you feel about life itself, how you feel about everybody owes me something, or am I a servant? Do I have a servant's heart? And as you begin, I mean, as leaders, as you're leading singles, or those of you who are single, and you begin to look in the relationship area of your life, the first thing you need to do is look in the mirror. And by the way, did you know that you rarely ever look in the mirror? Now, what you do is you look around yourself in the mirror. When you look in the mirror in the morning, you're doing the foo-foo stuff, or you're doing the shaving thing, and you're doing the hair whatchamacallit thing, and the thingy, and the blow dryer, and all this sort of stuff. And you're looking around you, but you're not looking at you. I want to give you a little exercise to do tomorrow morning. When you get up and you look in that mirror, I don't want you to look around you. I want you to look in your eyes. Look in your own eyes. And ask yourself the question, who am I? What is it that I really care about? What am I all about? Who am I as a person? Who am I as a Christian? Who am I? What's my attitude about life? Do I feel that everybody's against me? Do I feel that nothing ever goes right? Do I feel I will never succeed? How do I feel about life? What is my attitude about life? Because whatever my attitude about life is, I'm going to take that into a relationship. And everybody in this room has been in a relationship with somebody who was in love with themselves, haven't you? Attitude. Your attitude about life is crucial to your success in relationships. The number one danger zone, and in my book, by the way, this is the number one danger zone in marriage as well. Attitude. Everything rises and falls on your attitude. Your attitude will drive your thoughts. Your thoughts will drive your actions. Your actions will determine your success. Every time. Attitude is the number one danger zone in anybody's life. And in single relationships, it can make or break a relationship before it ever gets started. Your attitude about life. Secondly, your attitude about love. Attitude about love is a very challenging thing to assess. It's hard to admit for yourself what your attitude about love is. Do I want a relationship for the wrong reasons? Tommy Nelson, in his series Song of Solomon, has anybody ever seen that? It's fantastic. If you've never viewed that video series or heard the audio tapes or CDs, you need to try to do that. Maybe talk to your church or your association or whatever grouping you have and ask if they might somehow do a combined seminar with those videos of Tommy Nelson doing Song of Solomon. Mm-hmm. He's been all over the country. And if you ever see a Tommy Nelson seminar anywhere near driving distance for you, you should go. I mean, it's incredible. But in Tommy Nelson's series, he talks about how people ought to go about relationships, and he equates it to a race, running a race. He said, life is like a race. And your goals and your relationships, all this stuff, he said, imagine it's like a race. And here you are, you're focused and you're running. And you're running this race. He said, what you ought to focus on is the running. That's, you're living, you're in life, you're in living. You should focus on that. Focus on being the best you that you can be. He said, and if you happen to notice somebody of the opposite sex running in the same direction, you might want to wave and say, hello, how you doing? But keep running. And then you run for a while. Well, if they're still there after a while, then you might say, hey, my name is Max, what's your name? And kind of meet each other, but keep running. And then you keep running and running and running, and then you might share a bottle of water or something, you know. But he said, the deal is not the person running by you, it's the run. It's this thing you're headed toward. It's this goal. It's your life. Mm-hmm. You have a responsibility to lead your life with excellence. And so he uses this metaphor of a race. He said, you keep running. If others are running with you, well, that might be somebody you might want to meet. But you got to keep running. Because you know what? If you're running a marathon, you're running this 26 point whatever it is miles. The reason I don't know exactly because I've never done it. And I never will, probably, okay? But if you are running this marathon, and you know you're a good looking woman, and I look at there and see you running this marathon, and here you are, you're at about the 10 mile point, what I could do is I could run out right beside you and I could run like crazy for maybe a half a mile. But not much longer for me. You see, I'm retired Army. I'm getting ready to retire from my church and speak full-time and write and so on and so forth. So what I've developed is the retiree exercise program. It's really easy. You might want to consider this, you know, for yourself. Here's how it works. You get up early in the morning, you run around the block five times, push the block under the bed, and get back in bed. But after I move over to Martin, Tennessee, I'm going to get a bigger block. Maybe next year I'll put it in another room. You know, who knows? I mean, I don't want to go too far out on the edge here. Okay? So you see, I could run out beside you and I could fake it for a while, couldn't I? Mm-hmm. I mean, I could, nice and, I'm not even sweating. I'm running. And you think, hey, this guy's running pretty good here, you know? But only for a little while. You see, it's the long haul you're interested in. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to stay married to my wife for 85 years. As long as I can live, you know, at least that long, I want to say, man, you're in this thing for the long haul. Singles want to be in relationships for the long haul. You know, you don't need to go up and down and up and down relationships. That gets old after a while. And so, when someone blazes into your life, anybody can run real good for a half a mile or a quarter of a mile or whatever. But it's the long haul. That's why one of the key words in single relationships is T-I-M-E. And I'll tell you, I have dug my heels in on so many singles in my group trying to slow them down in their relationship as much as I could, hanging on for dear life, dragging my heels, trying to get them to wait, to take T-I-M-E. And I'll tell you, the relationships that have blazed out and matured too quick and got married, I can track back. I keep records 13 years back of all the singles that's got married in my group, all 350 of them that got married out of my group. And I know basically where they are and who they are. And I can show you the word divorced by every relationship that went too fast. Just my list of marriages. And it's a sad thing. So Tommy Nelson says, if you're running this race and somebody comes up and they're running beside you, wait a while. See if they can stick it out. After a while, if their tongue's hanging out and they're sweating and they're starting to have a heart attack, that might be a clue. Might be a clue. Okay? So, that kind of a metaphor, what is someone's attitude about love? Are they in it for them? Or are they in it for serving? You know, Jesus said that the Son of Man has come to serve and not to be served. If we're going to pattern our love life after Jesus' principles, then we need to be about serving. When I do premarriage counseling, I get a man and a woman in the room. And we do all the premarriage stuff. And at some point, I'll look at the man and woman and I'll say, okay, now I'm going to tell you what your job is in marriage. And I'll look at the woman and I say, your job, until you die, is to serve Him without question. And I look at him and I say, your job until the day you die is to serve her without question. Now, if you're not willing to do that, you're not ready for marriage. You need to rethink this thing. Because marriage is W-O-R-K. Mm-hmm. All capital letters. It is work with a capital W. All relationships are work. Your relationship with God is work. Otherwise, you'd be spiritually deep. I would too. Relationship with God is work. Bible study is work. Your prayer life is work. Your relationship with your family, with your kids, yeah. It's W-O-R-K because you're just like me. You're an imperfect human being living in an imperfect world. And your relationship with a man or a woman is W-O-R-K. That's why it takes T-I-M-E. Attitude about love is crucial. You see, a lot of people, unfortunately, most people come into a relationship with this in their mind. With them. What is in it for me? What's in it for me? It's that old selfishness thing. We are born with this disease called selfishness, and you will die with that disease. And your ability to suppress that disease throughout your life will be a determining factor in your success in all areas, one of those being in relationships. So most people come into relationships with this with them question in their mind. What is in it for me? It's all about me. Well, if you look in Rick Warren's new book, Purpose Driven Life, first statement says, it is not about you. It's not about you. Danger zone number two, ignoring their passion. I'm a passionate kind of guy, and I'm a goal setter, and I've had a vision for my life for a long time. God has given that to me years ago, and I'm focused, and I get so frustrated with people, you know, particularly singles I work with, who have no clue what their passion is, who never even ask the question, what do I really care about in life? Sometimes I'll get singles, I say, okay, get out a piece of paper, and here's what I want you to do. I say, okay, if you had all the money in the world, money was not an object. Time was not an object. Nothing in your life was a distracting or a limiting factor in your life. What would you do with your life? What is it that drives you inside? What burns inside of you? What is the passion you have in your life? What is it that you would do with your life? That is your passion. My brother is... I have many brothers. I have 9 brothers and sisters, by the way. I have 3 sisters and 6 brothers. And some of those are in ministry and doing other things. And one of my brothers, who was a missionary for 12 years in New Guinea, and his wife got sick and they had to come back. He's in part-time ministry, and then he also does investments for missionaries and life insurance for missionaries and stuff like that. And so he knows all the national statistics. And here's what he says. He says that only 5% of Americans will retire happy and financially stable. Only 5%. Because only 5% of Americans ever really gear their life toward their passion. See, most of us start out in life just getting a job, doing anything we can do. And from there, we start burdening ourselves down with debt, and we block ourselves from moving out into our areas of passion. My son is 32. He's single. He graduated from Baylor University, master's degree in information systems. He is a web designer. He's a very creative guy. He's a graphics designer. I don't know if you've ever seen the Michelin tire commercial where this radial tire kind of separates itself in all of these different levels. My son designed that graphic for Michelin and does Michelin websites and stuff like that. Living in New York City for 5 years, making $75,000 a year, just as a young single guy, paid cash for his car, all that kind of stuff. And one day he called me up and he said, Dad, I'm going to quit. And I said, okay, why are you going to quit? He said, because this is not my passion. I said, what's your passion? He said, I want to go to a mission in Hong Kong. He said, I've been there once, and it's run by an Australian group, and they help a lot of people around the world, and they need help with their website. They want me to design a United Nations website, so countries and corporations around the world will have a central place to donate time and aircraft space and stuff, and the countries in need would have a place to go to find that stuff, and they want me to design that website. And so I said, well, how much does it pay? He said, well, no, I have to pay to do it. I have to pay to do it. And I said, son, you got to do what your passion is. So he walked in the office and he quit. He moved down to Nashville, Tennessee, close to us. He rented a little apartment. There's one of those old mansions down there that this lady's husband died long ago, and so she rents out to, you know, young guys. And so he rented a room from this lady, and he works in his apartment, and he does websites, earn enough money to pay his rent and buy his food, and he does most of his work for the UN and the mission in Hong Kong. And 2 months out of the year, he actually goes to Hong Kong on site to do the details and to work in their warehouse. And he went from making $75,000 a year to making $18,000 a year. And he has never been happier in his life. He has a new relationship there in Nashville with this beautiful young lady. And he is following his passion. And I told him, go for it. Man, you don't wait too late to follow your passion. But here's what my son did. My son listened to us about financial matters earlier in his life, and he didn't burden himself down financially. So he could walk away from New York City with one day's notice because he didn't have any bills. And that's where a lot of singles make a huge, huge mistake, is that they get distracted by things and they get financially burdened down so that they prevent themselves from following their passion. Ignoring passion is a huge danger zone in life. When you ignore passion, you can end up like this. This guy sitting there holding a target. I have no clue what the details are, why this guy is holding this target. But I would not want to be holding this target for somebody to shoot at. Okay? When you don't follow your passion, you can end up being the target. Okay? If you don't follow your passion, you can not shoot at a target, but you can be the target. The target of everybody who wants a piece of you, a piece of your time, your energy, your emotions, your resources, your money. I mean, you can be the target if you're not careful. Also, if you don't follow your passion, you can end up something like this. This lady works in a zoo, and she is catching stool samples from an elephant in a bag. This is not something I would raise my hand to volunteer for. This is not in my area of passion, okay? It's in my area of pew, but it's not in my area of passion, okay? Danger zone number three, not knowing the Word. Now, there's two aspects of the Word I want to talk about. First of all, let somebody look up Genesis 2:24 for me. You got your Bible handy? Anybody got their Bible handy? Okay, Genesis 2:24. Mine's over there in my briefcase. But if one of you got a Bible handy, most of you probably have your Bible memorized, and that's why you don't need it. So Genesis 2:24, the Word on relationship says,
this explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one.
Okay, now here we are. We're in the creation process. God has created stuff and stuff and stuff, and then animals and animals. He created Adam, and Adam named the animals. And Adam said, there ain't nobody like me around here. I'm getting a little bit lonely. So God created Adam, and Adam said, woo, this is really good stuff. Here we are in the creation process. And right in the creation process, all of a sudden, the Bible has something totally out of character in it. So shall a man leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife, and they two shall become one flesh. You know why that's so weird? Because at this point, there were no mothers and fathers. There was only Adam and Eve. Mothers and fathers didn't exist yet. You know what God did? He took relationships from down in history and drug them right up to the creation process, giving a high priority to relationships. You know what? God created relationships before He created churches, before He created sports, before He created recreation, before He created activities, before He created kids. He created relationships between men and women. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we take something that God gave a huge high priority to, and we put it the last thing we care about, the last thing we work on, right, the last thing we commit to, relationships. Mm-hmm. Isn't that something? Isn't that crazy? See, God puts in His Word, He puts relationships number one. You know why? Because He wants a relationship with us.
Right.
He knew that the most crucial relationship for you is with Him.
Yes.
And He put priority in relationships by dragging it right up to the creation process. We, on the other hand, often give it second fiddle. We give it just the afterthought in relationships. I, in my church, in my singles ministry, I do continuous, ongoing relationship training. Nobody can get married in our church without premarriage counseling. You can't even, from outside our church, you can't even come and rent the building, pay us $800 to rent the building. You can't even rent the building for a wedding unless you show us a letter of premarriage counseling. Because churches have no business condemning divorce until they start doing their job preparing people for marriage.
Amen.
So, at our church, it's very strict. You don't get married in our church, and you don't get married by one of our ministers unless you have premarriage counseling. It's just not going to happen. Now, in Tennessee, they have a new deal where if you get premarriage counseling, you get like $60 off on your marriage license, which is a good thing. It encourages people to get premarriage counseling. But most people don't do it. Very few people, I think less than 10% across America, ever get premarriage counseling. Okay? So, there is the Word from God on relationships. Not knowing this Word can be a danger zone. The second part of that danger zone is not knowing this Word here. Work. I had a young couple in not long ago. I was premarriage counseling. And I said, now you have to remember this. Marriage is a lot of work. And the young man said, well, I don't think that's right. I said, well, it doesn't matter what you think. I'm telling you. I've been doing this for 40 years. You know, I'm telling you. It's work. W-O-R-K. He said, I don't think it should have to be work. I said, I don't either. It should not have to be work. But I'm telling you, until you and I become perfect, it's going to be work. There was only one perfect, and look what they did to him. They hung him on a cross. I said, I'm telling you, your marriage to this beautiful, young, perfect woman, you think she's perfect, is going to be W-O-R-K. And you better not be caught off guard when this happens.
You're only perfect before the wedding.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, I was perfect a little while after the wedding, but you know, not long though. Not long. Yeah. Danger zone number four. Not knowing the differences. Not knowing the differences. Now, you ask somebody, what's the difference between men and women? And they give you the anatomical answer to that. And then the guys will say, well, I can tell you what the difference is. Women are weird. But you ask a woman, and what's the difference? And she said, well, I can tell you, guys are jerks. You know, I mean, you know, it's pretty clear, at least we think it's pretty clear, the differences between men and women. But I'm telling you, there are some differences that you're not aware of, that you're not really thinking about. But not knowing these differences, it can be a big danger zone in relationships. Now this is a little electronic box here, as in two sections. The top section is entitled "Man" and has one switch. The bottom is entitled "Women" and it has like 25 switches and buttons all over it, indicating that men are kind of simple and women are kind of complicated. At least from a relationship point of view, most people would say women have more aspects to their lives and more aspects that they care about in relationships than men do. Men are kind of simple-minded. On-off switch. That's been it. You've heard men are microwaves, women are crockpots. You know, you've heard that phrase before. Okay? So, this kind of illustrates, and there's some things that women think about men. There's some things that men think or say about women. And by the way, I wanted to point out something earlier. One resource I forgot to recommend to you. It's Christian Single Magazine, February of this year, had some great stuff that relates to this danger zone presentation, and I recommend that you get it. It may be available here, actually, at this conference. But on page 27 of this magazine is a whole article. It's entitled "Grown Up Dating." Grown Up Dating. And it talks about the process of getting singles to take what you learned as an adolescent about dating and leave that behind and get into the reality of dating. the reality of being a man, the reality of being a woman, and what that means for your life. And so this is a great resource for you. Grown Up Dating is what that is called. And what kind of reminded me to get this is a couple of years ago, there's this 40-year-old divorced guy in my group. He had been divorced 3 or 4 years. And a good friend of mine, he's a great guy, and he called me on his cell phone. It's about mid-morning, and he is a real estate appraiser, so he has a lot of flexible schedule. So he called me, and he's breathing real hard on the phone. He said, "Max, I have to see you. I have to see you right away." I said, "Okay, all right, Doyle, come on, come on." I thought maybe some family crisis, you know. And so a few minutes later, he comes zooming up in his pickup truck, stops outside my office, comes running off, and he's sweating. He's breathing hard. And I said, "Doyle, come on in." So I bring him in the office and close the door. I said, "Something's really crisis going on here." I said, "Well, Doyle, what's going on?" He said, "I got a date." And I did this. I should have done this. But hey, I'm sitting here like this, and Doyle's right here. And he said, "I got a date." And I looked at him like this, and I went... He said, "What?" I said, "Am I on candid camera?" You know, I'm looking around. I said, "So?" He said, what do I do?" I said, "Doyle, you're 40 years old. What do you mean, what do you do?" He said, I haven't had a date in 25 years. What do I do?" And so we sat there and talked a while, you know. And I remember my youth minister days when I used to talk to youth about dating. And I said, "Well," I said, "tell me about this lady." And he told me about her, you know. And he's so excited. And so I said, "Well, you know, usually restaurants work pretty good. You know, you go out to dinner." He said, "Well, what restaurant?" I said, "Well, you know, do you want to have kind of a little secluded place where you can talk?" I said, "You know, Olive Garden has a little secluded place." You know, we kind of talked that through. And he's sweating. He's breathing. And he's a 40-year-old guy, and he's, "What do? I have a date." I said, "Well, take her out, you know? I mean, you got a date." And so Grown Up Dating is a good resource. Anyway, so women have definite opinions about men. And so I was at the two oldest ones in my group, JT was 71, and Idabel was 65. And it was so cute to watch them. They'd hold hands, you know. We'd go out on trips. They were in our singles group, and they'd go out and they'd hold hands, and they'd sit on the bus together and so on. So one day, about a year later, they decided to get married. And so I went to the wedding, of course, did the wedding and the reception. So here we are at the reception. And Ida Bell is over here with all the women around her, and she's talking. And JT's over here with the guys, and he's talking. And so I'm kind of going like this, you know, I'm listening to what Ida Bell's having to say. And here are the words that Ida Bell Farmer used. She said, "Girls, remember this. Men are like parking spaces. All the good ones are taken and the rest are handicapped." And the girls just had a hootin' time over that. Now, JT's over here. Now, obviously, Ida Bell and JT have talked about these kinds of things before. And JT's over here. And so I walk over to JT. And I said, "JT, tell me about women." And here's the words that JT used. JT Farmer used these words. By the way, let me give you the women's verse first. The women's verse is Job 14:1. And that verse says, "Man born of woman is a few days and full of trouble." Now, I was sharing this verse with one of my young singles groups, and this 20-something woman in my group, she raised her hand and she said, "Max, I myself embrace the words of Jesus over in Luke 9:23, where he said, 'If any man will come after me, let him.'" I said, "I'm going to use that. I'm going to write that down and use that." And her name was Carolyn. But anyway, so women believe things about men and say things about men, have these stereotype thoughts about men. All men are, and then they'll say these things about men. And men are the same way. We know how women are, you know, and then they'll say these things. Well, women say men are like parking spaces, you know. Well, men say that women are like the weather. If you don't like the way they are, just wait a few minutes. They'll change. And men find it very frustrating thinking that they can't nail down what a woman thinks or what a woman believes or what a woman's doing because she changes so often. Men just can't keep up with all that. And so we find this difference here. The man's verse is in Proverbs 21:19. Better to live in a desert than in a house with a quarrelsome and ill-tempered wife. We had an amen from a couple of men back there. The international symbol of marriage. A man handing a credit card to a woman. Danger zone number 5. Distractions. This sounds crazy, but I think you'll identify with this. Our lives are so busy that while we desire relationships very much, we refuse to change our life to give relationships priority. Isn't that crazy? We are very distracted. We're distracted by our jobs. We're distracted by our friends. We're distracted by our family. We're distracted by the internet. We're distracted by television. We're distracted by, and you just keep naming it, Walmart. Distracted by Walmart. You ever tried to go into Walmart and just buy one thing?
Yes.
I'm telling you, I told my best friend when over dinner the other night, I said, when I die, bury me in the Walmart parking lot so my wife will come see me. About the only way. All right? We're a very distracted generation of people. And distractions hurt our relationship. It's a danger zone, being so distracted. Let me get back up here. Being so distracted that we can't concentrate and put effort into relationships. Because remember, what do relationships require? T. W-O-R-K. And a lot of T-I-M-E. And here's what these singles do. It just frustrates me. Sometimes I get singles in and I say, stop doing this. Yeah? Okay, listen, man. Here's your little word picture. I've got a glass of tea here. I'm from Tennessee, so we drink sweet tea. All right? So I've got a glass of sweet tea here, and I fill it up so that one more drop will take it over the edge. Okay? Now, it's full. Can I pour more tea in that glass? Yes.
Yeah.
But what happens to the tea that's in there? It comes out. I can put more in, but something's going to come out. And here's what we try to do. You are a very, very busy person. You got a busy job, busy family, busy friends, busy singles group, busy, busy, busy. And all of a sudden, a new possible relationship comes into your life. And what you try to do is you try to include this new relationship and not exclude anything else. Mm-hmm. That is a recipe for frustration. And if we are distracted, we cannot concentrate on all of these danger zones. We can't be thinking about these danger zones. Here's what Neil Clark Warren says in his Finding the Love of Your Life. Or he also has a book, How to Know Somebody is the Right One for You in 2 Dates or Less. That's a pretty good little book. Some of my singles have read that book. How to Know Someone is the One for You in 2 Dates or Less. That's a Neil Clark Warren book. The same guy, Finding the Love of Your Life. The same guy, eHarmony.com. Website. But here's what he says that people should do in the dating process. Before you ever go on your first date, he said you should sit down with a piece of paper and you should write down your must-haves and will-not-accepts
right.
On a piece of paper so that you will see what you've written. In other words, one of your must-haves, for instance, might be someone who's a blonde, let's just say, okay? That you got this blonde hair thing, and, you know, even though all these jokes about blondes, maybe you got a blonde hair thing, and so that is your must-have. Well, if you absolutely must have a blonde, why would you go out with a brunette?
Right.
Or you give him or her a chance to change from brunette to blonde, you know, go buy the bottle or whatever, okay? This is the point. In your mind, this list already exists. It does. And when you are, or whoever you're leading singles, when you are meeting someone, whether you like it or not, you're evaluating them. You're sizing this person up. And your mind is saying, this person meets my criteria, or they don't, or they might. But if you have no idea what those criteria are, then you will broaden your acceptance of people who do not fit your preferences. So he says, write down your preferences. Now, that's a very mechanical thing to do. Some people say, are you kidding me? Write down your love preferences? No. Well, I mean, I think you ought to give it a try. Because know up front who you are, look in the mirror thing, look in your eyeballs in the mirror, and decide who you are and what you care about. and decide what's going to be important to you. And when you have a category of people in your life that meets those standards within you, and you begin to pursue a relationship, you have to understand that this is a danger zone right here. You know, sometimes friends will get mad at you because you don't hang out with them as much anymore. And you have to deal with mad friends. You ever notice that?
Yes.
Friends who hope you get a relationship. You're hoping for each other. Okay, I hope you get one. I hope you get one. When you finally get one, they say, well, you're not hanging out with me anymore. You know? So, distractions can be a danger zone. You know why? Because when you get a relationship, your life has to change. Change. Your schedule has to change. And nobody likes change but a wet baby. Okay? You have to force yourself to change. Otherwise, distractions can be a danger zone for you. Number six. Danger zone number six. Yeah, I missed this too. I'm sorry. Back under danger zone number four, not knowing the differences. Oh, I got it in my hand. This same Christian Single magazine on page 28. And this is really great. Brain tease. It goes through about a 6-page process of talking about the difference in the brains between men and women. Mm-hmm. It's in Christian Single magazine, February 07, on page 28. It is fantastic. And what it does, let me find that part again. It talks about, like, one difference between men and women that most people don't know is that if you look in the, go to the hospital nursery and look at the newborns, okay? You got a girl and you got a boy so laying there. At that moment, the girl baby will have 40% more connections between the left and right half of the brain than the boy will. Because testosterone, which makes a man, and that's a very good thing, is released into the bloodstream of the boy. And while it makes a male, the downside of testosterone is that it is lethal and it kills brain connections. Now, you say we guys are half-witted. All right, I'll give you that. You know, men are half-witted. But women have 40% more connections between the left and right half of the brain. So women view the world at a broader view than men do. Mm-hmm. See, there's no such thing as women intuition. It's just a broader view of the world. Women perceive things, relationship things, better than men do. The upside for men is that men can focus better than women can. Men can exclude distractions and accomplish something. Why do you think they can ignore you when they're watching TV?
Selective hearing.
So men have the ability to focus better than women. So careers and things that require more focus, there are more men doing those things than women. Women are better at relationships than men are. Women can listen to two conversations at once and understand both. Men can't do that. Men have trouble listening to one conversation. Women speak about 7,000 words a day. Men speak about 3,000 words a day. In the normal workday world, women speak about 7,000 words, men about 3,000 words. So here you are, you meet for a date that night. He's already over 3,000, and you're only up to 5,000. And he don't want to talk, and you do. That's why. Because men normally will speak about 3,000. They've had it. They're done. Women, if they're not up to 7, they got to talk. They're going to talk. And so that's one of the differences between men and women. So, by the way, I remember this not long ago. Somebody told me about a single man on the beach in California. Just taking a walk on the beach in the morning. Stumbles over something in the sand, digs it out, and it's a genie bottle. He rubs it, and a genie comes out. And he says, oh boy, 3 wishes. Genie said, no, 1 wish. I'm a modern genie, make it quick. He said, well, I've always wanted to go to Hawaii, but I'm afraid of the water. I get seasick, you know, so I don't want to go on a ship. And I'm afraid of heights, so I don't want to fly. So I want you to build me a bridge to Hawaii. The genie said, oh man, that's hard. You got those deep crevices in the ocean and there's these whales that come along and ships that come along. He said, that's hard. Give me something easier. He said, well, I've always wanted to understand women. The genie said, you want that bridge 2 lanes or 4 lanes? Here's a big danger zone for you right here. Danger zone number 6. Failure to deal with the past. David, this is a big one. This is a big one. I use the phrase baggage. We all have baggage. We all come into relationships, into life with baggage. Now, there are some people who arrive at your church in U-Haul trucks. And some people are just carrying, you know, suitcases, baggage. But you got some that arrive in U-Haul trucks. And the moving van's on the way, all right? I mean, relationships, everybody brings baggage in relationships. And failure to deal with that past, is a huge, huge danger zone. The typical display of this failure is a divorce will happen and one or the other will not, the ink won't even be dry on the line and they're in another relationship. And not long down the road, somebody's married. And now they're in a second or third marriage or whatever it may be. And the, you know, right now the divorce rate is around 50% or so for first marriages. Divorce rate for second marriage is a higher third, and you'll see those stats in a few minutes. But what happens is that they're not dealing with the past. We have divorce care year-round in our church. We only take like 1 week breaks between divorce care sessions, and all year long we had like 500 divorce singles go through our divorce care over the years, because people need to deal with the past, deal with whatever it is that's going to damage their relationship ability in the future, and this is a very, very huge danger zone. 1 Samuel 10:20-22. And I'll just outline this for you. God has agreed, you know, the children of Israel are saying, "We want a king, we want a king." You know, we've had prophets and we've had judges, but everybody else has a king. You know, they're whining, "Why can't we have a king? And we want a king too," you know. And so they want a king. And so God says, "All right, I'll give you a king." And so he leads the prophet to call the entire nation of Israel, all 12 tribes, into this huge valley. And he begins to narrow down the process. And so the prophet prays and says, okay, which tribe is this? And God reveals the tribe. And then he reveals the clan within the tribe. And then he reveals the family within the tribe. And it is the family of Saul that he reveals. And he brings the family into the center. And the prophet says, wait a minute, not everybody's here. And he prays again. And God says, the man that I picked is not there. And so he prays to God. He says, well, where is the man? And then the phone rings, which should have been turned off. Let me end this right quick. Sorry about that. And let me turn this on. He says, where is the man? Now, when they traveled, these are millions of people, right? And so they travel, and you can bet they had a lot of stuff. They had tents, and they had camels, and they had food, and they had stuff and stuff and stuff. And there was this huge storage area where they had all their stuff. And they were over here at this big, huge meeting. And here's what God says to the prophet in verse 22. He says, he has hidden himself among the baggage. Here's what Saul did. Saul was afraid to be king. So while everybody else was doing their thing, narrowing all these people down, Saul sneaks off and he goes over to the storage area and he crawls under the baggage so nobody can see him. It's a great word picture.
Yeah, it is.
He has hidden himself among the baggage. And you know what? I have spoken with and preached to thousands of singles who are hiding among their baggage. I have people come into my office and they tell me about the losses in their life, and I cry with them and pray with them and encourage them and counsel them. But when they come back and they want to tell me exactly the same thing again, I say, whoa, wait a minute. You told me that last week. Well, I know, but I said, well, I understood. You told me that last week. Tell me something new. They don't have anything new. I say, okay. You told me, I understand what the loss you've gone through, and we've prayed together and cried together. Now let's talk about the future. Where do we go from here? You know what? They don't come back anymore. Most of them don't come back. Because they don't want to go into the future. They just want to talk about their loss. They want to hide under that baggage. And that's what Saul did. He crawled under the baggage to hide. And you got people coming to your church carrying their baggage. You got people arriving in U-Haul trucks. And you know what? Sometimes they'll want you to go out to the truck and see their baggage. They want to talk about their baggage. They'll go out on a date and they'll ruin the date because they want to talk about their baggage. Sometimes they carry it with them. Say, hey, look at this, you know, open it right there on the table. Look at this, you know. You won't believe what happened to me. Look at this baggage here. It's incredible. Dealing with the past is a failure to deal with the past is a huge danger zone. Huge in relationships, in single relationships. Failure to deal with the past, it sabotages more relationships than I've ever seen. Here are some stats for you. You know that about 50 or so, in my county, 52% of first marriages end in divorce. Nationally, about 70% of second marriages end in divorce. It varies depending on where you are, but this is kind of a generalized. 75% of second marriages that include children end in divorce because of the difficulty in blending families together. By the way, you need a great, great resource for blended families, the best I've ever seen. Lifeway has a resource called New Faces in the Frame. Kind of speaking of a photograph. New Faces in the Frame. It's one of the best. And by the way, when I do premarriage counseling with someone who's getting remarried and they have kids, they have to also go through that workbook before I'll marry them. New Faces in the Frame. Blended family training.
Do you know who the author is?
I've got it right there.
Lifeway.com will get it.
Yes, Lifeway.com, you can get the author. I'm trying to remember. It seems like it starts with an F, but I just can't remember for sure. I've drawn that blank. It's stuck back here somewhere. I can't pull it forward yet. It's the disc is spinning, but there's nobody there. Okay. All right.
Max, is that this year?
This is a couple of years old. Yeah,
this is. Care had some higher ones.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. These are a couple of years old. I just haven't verified those, and I'll change this when I verify. About 80% of third marriages end in divorce, and about 90% of fourth marriages end in divorce. Doesn't sound like we learn from our mistakes very well, does it? Anybody remember the old comedian Red Skelton?
Yeah.
Red Skelton?
Yeah.
Red Skelton, on one of his shows one day, he said, I used to have a job singing at Elizabeth Taylor's weddings. The pay wasn't much, but the work was steady. You know? Danger zone number 7. S-E-X. Sex. Failure to control sexual relationship in a relationship. 80% of couples who come in for marriage who are already in a sexual relationship, 80% of those get divorced. That's why when a couple comes into my office, first session, I ask them, are you two in a sexual relationship? And if they say yes, first thing we do is we pray. The second thing we do is I have a little pre-marriage test, and there's a covenant on that test. And they sign, right there, they both sign a covenant to sexual purity until their wedding night. If they don't sign the covenant, I've only had one couple, one guy and a couple, not sign it. And I said, well, I can't help you then. So they sign that covenant. And the second covenant they sign is the covenant to go to small group Bible study together. Because Barna Research, in researching Christians and marriage and relationships, discovered that when a Christian couple is not only in church, but they're in Bible study together, the divorce rate drops 500%. For couples who are in small group Bible study together. So they have, for me, they have to sign a covenant to Bible study together. If they don't sign that covenant, I can't help you. I'm not going to be part of the problem here. I'm going to be part of the solution. And so, and if they don't have a Sunday school class, we find one for them. You know? Sometimes this guy will be from another church and the girl in my group, and I'll find them a Sunday school class in his church. And then I'll call their teacher to make sure they're going. You know? I'm not going to be part of the problem. People who fail to deal with their sexual urges in relationships and who get into a sexual relationship sabotage the relationship. It is a huge, huge danger zone. One of the big disappointments, I guess you might say, of my last 13 years is that I deal with singles and a huge number of marriages, and you'll see those in just a second here. Huge number of marriages. 75% of all the couples who come to me are in a sexual relationship. It's a sad thing. because I have to try to help them overcome that and get into a relationship, a marriage of excellence and quality. And I do a 1-year follow-up with all couples. They have to come back to me every so often. So anyway, sex in a relationship, getting into a sexual relationship will sabotage a relationship. It also, a huge thing a sexual relationship does, remember those blinders I talked about?
Yep.
A sexual relationship will put blinders on the people, and they can't hear or see their friends warning them or their minister warning them. They can't see the danger zones of this person, the quirks of this. They will overlook obvious warning signs in the other person. And so, danger zone number 8, being unequally yoked. Now, I'm going to talk about 2 aspects of this. First of all, I want to talk about 2 Corinthians 6:14, and where he says, do not be unequally yoked together as with unbelievers. And so, obviously, he's talking about spiritually. Oh, yeah, 5 minutes. Thank you. Obviously, talking about spiritually, don't be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. Because if you're not together spiritually, you're going to fight. I mean, it is going to be a tough, tough relationship. But also, don't be unequally yoked socially or emotionally. If somebody is just came out of the mental institution and they're at that point in their life, it's not a good deal to get involved in a marriage relationship with that person because they're not ready emotionally. If someone is not on your emotional level, you have to be very, very careful. Here's one example. This our minister of youth cousin got married. He was an early 30-something guy and he married a 30-something woman. He was a high school dropout, Christian singer guy. Very good Christian singer guy. She was a PhD at a university teaching in biology something or other. Okay? Now those two can't talk a common language. They can't. I mean, your love and sex only take you so far. And when he told me about this relationship, and I said, oh, man. I said, you need to help them because they live somewhere else. So I said, is there any way you can help them? You'll get some counseling now. Well, 8 months down the road, boom. Crash and burn. Crash and burn. Because she soon discovered that he could not have a conversation with her. Other than, did you get the bread or you know, at the store? I mean, she couldn't have an intellectual conversation with him. He could not have a spiritual conversation with her. Crash and burn. Number 9, failure to control finances. Huge, huge, huge. Christian Single Magazine here. They took a guy there in Nashville, and they said, we want you to live on $15 a day for a week and tell us what happens. And it's a little deal about finances. I recommend, I think I put it in your notes about financial peace. Let me find it here right quick. Dave Ramsey, Financial Peace. And also there is a workbook out for singles on finances called Every Single Cent. And it is done by Larry Burkett's organization, Crown Financial. Mm-hmm. You can go to Crown Financial and you can get those workbooks. And it's specifically targeting singles and their financial challenges. It's very good stuff. Financial Peace, it's hard to get better than Financial Peace. Every Single Cent?
The Financial Peace.
Dave Ramsey.
Okay.
DaveRamsey.com. When I teach about finances, here's what I do. I put this up, this letter D up, and I say, this session is brought to you by the letter D. Discipline. Discipline. The number one thing about finances you need to know and practice is this. Never spend more than you make. Never spend more than you make. Credit cards are bad. Stomp on them. Crush them. Cut them up. This is brought to you by the letter D. If you do not discipline yourself, you're in trouble. Danger zone number 10. Unrealistic expectations. I tell you, 3 years ago, had this second marriage group, a couple come in to me for premarriage counseling, and I'd known this lady for a while in the group, and that was the first time I'd met the guy that she brought in for premarriage counseling. And she and we talked about, you know, the relationship and how things have to change, and I said, you know, you haven't known him very long, and I said, you really don't know a lot about his life, probably. And she said, oh, I know a lot about him. I said, well, you know, obviously you're expecting him to change when you get married. And she said, well, I'm telling you, he has promised to get off drugs as soon as we get married. And I did another one of the... were you on candid camera here? I said, are you serious? He said, I promise. I promise. I said, this is incredible. I said, so you've been married. Yeah, I looked at her and I said, you've been married before. I said, and your former spouse's name was, and she gave me the name. And then I looked over him and I said, and you've been married before. And said, who were you married to? And he said, Kim. And she said, Kim? I thought her name was Jennifer. He said, oh, that was my first marriage, Kim. You've been married twice before, she said. I said, now look at this picture. You're sitting in my office and you don't even know he was married twice? Give me a break. Give me a break here. Unrealistic expectations. He's going to quit drugs as soon as we get married. Did you know? Work. It's work. That's unexpected. A lot of people think that everything will be hunky-dory peachy-keen when they walk off that platform and say, I do. And the furthest thing from the truth has just been said. Did you know that 40% of all divorces happen in the first 18 months? 40% of all divorces happen the first 18 months of marriage. Unrealistic expectations. Well, the danger zones have to do with relationships under construction. Relationships are under construction for your whole life. I'm still learning about my wife. She's still changing. I'm still trying to figure out. She's trying to figure me out. She'll say, well, I didn't know you like that. And we've been married, only been married 41 years. So I'm telling you, it's work the whole time. It's the best work I ever had. It's great work. But relationships are tough, and there are a lot of danger zones. Now, my book, I'm hoping my book will come out by 2008. I don't know who's going to publish it yet, but I hope it'll come out by 2008. And there are approximately 35 danger zones for singles in the book. There are many other little age danger zones and career and all the kind of stuff, danger zones. But anyway, and I hope that I can do a good job of really helping people through those danger zone areas. And then in marriage, there are more in marriage, by the way, almost 50 for marriage. But the relationships are under construction. Now, here's some actions you can take. I won't go into all these because we're out of time, but I'll just give you the list of things that you as singles or leaders or your churches need to be concerned with. Number one, you need moral leaders. You need leaders with moral ethics. I've had a couple of leaders fail morally, and I had to remove them. They were single guys who failed morally. The second thing is relationship training. Quality relationship training is essential if you're going to help people make it through danger zones in relationships. Number three, your church, talk to your pastor, your church must require premarriage counseling. I mean, only when it is required will people start doing it. And your church, lead them, help them, pray for your leaders, and encourage them to require premarriage counseling. They need divorce prevention plan. Churches need a divorce prevention plan. Because when people get married, it's like the church, you know, they kiss, you may kiss the bride, they da-da-da-da, walk off. And it's like the church says, y'all be careful now, you hear? Be careful out there. It's dangerous. We'll see you, you know, we'll see you in 10 years, whatever the case may be. Because churches don't do a lot of divorce prevention planning to help couples. Churches need a plan to help married couples avoid divorce. They need a mentoring plan. What we have at our church is we have successful married couples that we will put with new couples that get married. A mentoring plan. Give the young lady has permission to go straight to that woman anytime. The man can call that man anytime, day or night, when they have a challenge or a question about marriage or they're in conflict. And so we follow up. We also have a resource from Divorce Care. It's called Before You Divorce. It is a counseling kit that you can give to a couple before, if they're in trouble, if their marriage is in trouble, you can take this and just give it to them. It's not marriage counseling. It is the reality of divorce. The reality of what happens to the kids, what happens to finances, what happens legally. It is the reality of that. Before you divorce, it's a good resource. Our stats. In 13 years, we've had 345 singles married out of my group. We've had 231 marriages, because some of them married people from other churches. 135 have gone through premarriage counseling, and the current divorce rate among those premarriage counsel couples is less than 5%. Okay. So, the future is bright. Thank you for being here.
Go ahead and put his class name on your evaluation sheet so you don't forget where you were the first session.
Anyway, I can get a copy of that you might be list that you gave off of.